Another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Well, hello, this is Fran McNamara, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the August 21st through 27th edition of Buffalo Business First, right here on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And I'm looking at the cover here, and the cover story says Wealth Migration. And whoever designed this cover, very clever. It's a butterfly, and the butterfly's left wing would be made up, composed of a map, a section of a map. Of course, there's nothing designated on there. But then the right wing is composed of pictures of parts of money, of bills. And it says, Wealth Migration. Here's a look at where Western New York's wealth is clustered and where it is headed nationwide. That'll be on pages 10 through 17 by Sarah Paulson Meehan. So let's get to page 2 right away. Hopefully we can get down to page 10. First things first, and oh my gosh, it sure looks like a hotel room. And it turns out it is. Seneca Niagara Resort, a $47 million makeover. And there's a picture, of course, of a well-dressed, can I say, room with two queen-size beds. Or perhaps they're king-size. I'm not an expert on beds. Each has three pillows and a very beautiful covering. The white spread is a multicolored green brownish hues for the fall. And, of course, the crest of the Seneca Nation in the middle of each one. And over by the window, there's your table with the coffee maker and also two chairs to sit down. Very, very pretty mural on the wall. And it says, Tracy Drury writes this for us, renovations will include a complete overhaul of nearly 604 guest rooms. Okay. And Tracy writes, the Seneca Niagara Resort and Casino in Niagara Falls will undergo a $47 million renovation, including its first complete guest room overhaul in 23 years. The renovation, slated to begin in October, will include major updates to nearly all the hotel's 604 rooms, as well as hallway carpeting and lighting. Okay. Kevin Nephew, who's pictured here in the center of the article, obviously Native American businessman here, stylish suit, almost like a Auburn gold, if there is such a thing, tie, with a big smile on his face. And he says, and he is the president and CEO of Seneca Resorts and Casinos, the renovation will be breathtaking from what we've seen in mock rooms. It's a full renovation. This will be probably the most extensive renovation of the hotel since its inception. Close quote. The project will be overseen by construction manager Arc Advancing Revolutionary Construction. With plans to do the work three floors at a time, the construction time frame has an estimated completion date of December of 2077. Opened in 2003 by Seneca Gaming Corp, now known as Seneca Resorts and Casinos, the 26th-floor hotel is the largest hotel by room count in the 8-county Western New York region. Occupancy rates run in the high 90%. Nephew said with 181,000 occupied rooms in 2025, 141,000 rooms occupied in 26 through just July. Okay, the project will affect 594 of the hotel's 604 rooms. The remaining rooms are penthouse suites that were renovated previously. Now, Kevin Nephew said, the color scheme will bring shades of blue into the guest rooms with furnishing and decor that tie into the Niagara River and the Seneca culture. The Seneca Niagara Resort is home to nearly 1,600 of the company's overall 3,000-person workforce, spread across three casinos, two hotels, and a dozen restaurants. The renovation represents the Seneca Nation's largest investment in Niagara Falls since just before the pandemic, when it put $40 million into the lobby and exterior of the building. In 2024, ownership invested $5 million in the hotel room furniture updates, a new phone system, and an arcade, as well as new lighting and an overhaul of the 7,500-square-foot meeting and conference center. The company is also planning renovations for its Blues Burger Bar. That project would follow a $2.7 million investment in the Seneca Cafe at its Seneca Allegheny Resort property in Salamanca. Updates are now underway to redesign the buffet. Next up, updates and renovations are in the planning stage for its Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino property in downtown Buffalo, though no details are as yet finalized. Okay, so that's first things first, or as they call it, first things first. And Tracy Drury brought that story to us about the $47 million makeover. And I'm just pondering here, I wonder what it cost to build to begin with 23 years ago. Just curious. Okay, the next one on page three, Power People, about this feature. Buffalo Business First publishes three annual power lists, the Power 250, the Power 200 Women, and Power 100 Business Leaders of Color, featuring the top business leaders in Western New York. Each week, we will tell you more about an executive on one of those lists. And this week, it's Colin Gehl, G-E-H-L, Chief Human Resources Officer for Say Yes Buffalo. And Tracy Drury, once again, steps to the plate to present questions or areas of discussion for Colin. And there's a picture of him, again, very confident look. He's got a brownish, this seems to be the theme now for the fall coming on, a brownish, very thick sweater covering a black T-shirt. Well, I shouldn't say a black T-shirt, it's a black shirt with a collar. And again, he's got a very satisfied and confident style. Question and answer. It's been just over a year since Colin Gehl was promoted to Chief Human Resources Officer at Say Yes Buffalo, a high point in his two-decade-long career in HR. Born in New York City, he's lived in Buffalo since he was a toddler. His career has included stints with Child and Family Services and Housing Opportunities Made Equal of Buffalo, and a four-year tenure on the board of the Buffalo Niagara Human Resource Association. And here's a quote from him. I had always done HR as part of my past roles at other organizations, but I worked for organizations that never had an official HR department. I had the opportunity to move into HR when I was working at Child and Family Services in Erie County to work in talent acquisition and recruitment. And that's how I officially started in HR. Okay, Tracy provides us with his Power 100 Leaders of Color rank, and Colin is at number 98. So Tracy asks, Colin, what's a lesson you learned from a mistake? Oh, and we've all made those. Okay, and he answers, I have learned not to take everything seriously. What I mean by that is that everyone makes mistakes, and browbeating yourself because of a mistake is not going to be helpful for you going forward. When I make a mistake, I assess why the mistake may have occurred and how I may learn a lesson and try to make sure I'm not in a similar position again to make that mistake. Okay, next question from Tracy. What's your ultimate career goal? And Colin answers, to continue to influence the HR community in a way that ensures that any individual that is interested in pursuing a career in HR has that opportunity. And now on a personal level, Tracy asks, what is your favorite thing to do in Buffalo? And he answers, it's to take a walk around Delaware Park. I just love it. It's so relaxing and peaceful. I do it with the Say Yes team on wellness walks once a week. It's just gorgeous and calm and serene. Next, Tracy Drury asks Colin, what is your favorite place to eat in the metro area? And Colin says, I love going to Mythos on Elmwood or Betty's. I've lived in the city for years and recently moved a few years ago out to Williamsville. I was in Elmwood Village for 22 years and I keep going back into the city. Next, Tracy asks, if you had to choose a different career, what would you pick and why? And Colin answers, I think I would pick acting. The reason is because in my role in HR, I often have to be a chameleon in how I approach my situation, and I've always tried to be authentic. I feel like I'm tapping into different versions of myself. Okay, next, Tracy asks, what's an interesting fact about you that not everyone knows? He says, I really love music, and I like going to hear live music, though I don't get to do it as much as I used to. I love 90s R&B music. It's what I grew up with. Spotify always says I'm 50-something, but I'm in my 40s. My music taste makes me seem older. Next, Tracy asks, what's something you're listening to or watching that makes you laugh? And he says, well, every day I will watch The Golden Girls and The Simpsons. They're not new, but it's tried and true. I watch them daily. Now, here Tracy asks a question which they always ask of the people being interviewed. What's one change you would make to improve Buffalo? And he says, one change would be to ensure that equity was employed at all levels of government and systems, so equity would be the best practice across all industries. So next, Tracy asks, what was your first job, and would you do it again? Then he says, my very first job was working for the Mayor's Summer Youth Program in the Records Department in the Buffalo Board of Education. I did that for 6 weeks, and I would not want to do that again. Although I did remember, I was really good at organizing all those records. Okay, and next, Tracy asks, what is one thing you look for when hiring someone? And Colin says, I always look to ensure that people are kind and empathic. I'm sorry, and empathetic. They're the two qualities I've always looking for in terms of candidates for hire. You have to be inherently kind and have to be empathetic to people. And finally, Tracy asks Colin, how do you describe yourself as a boss? He says, I have direct reports, but I like to think that I'm kind. I'm understanding, I'm flexible, and I'm able to offer proper guidance. Okay, so that's it for page 3, Tracy Drury presenting questions and areas of concern to Colin Gill, Chief Human Resource Officer at Say Yes Buffalo. Okay, so it's time for me to remind you of something. We have to mention at intervals. So, to no surprise of you, you're listening to a reading of articles and features from Buffalo Business First on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Okay, next we go to Katie Anderson, who presents us with some items. In fact, let's see, 1, 2, 3 in all, under the heading Business of Entertainment. And the first is North Buffalo. Okay, it says, North Buffalo new walking cycling trail in the works for a rail line. Okay. A national nonprofit is working with local organizations to turn an abandoned rail corridor into a walking and cycling trail that connects Northwest Buffalo neighborhoods to the Niagara River and to the Empire State Trail. The proposed River Rock Connector Trail would extend more than 5 miles, including a 1.5-mile stretch of abandoned railroad along River Rock Drive, Reno Street, and the west side of the Wheeland Buffalo campus. The Trust for Public Land is working with the Black Rock Riverside Alliance and the Buffalo Niagara Riverland Trust on the project, which would serve the Black Rock, Riverside, West Hurdle, and Grant Amherst neighborhoods. Now, Mike Lieberman, Program Director for New York Community Trails for the Trust for Public Land, says, "It's a large right-of-way where we could cut this trail, but there's opportunities to activate the space in other ways." Okay, that's end quote. Now, those other ways could include a playground, a park, or a bike pump track. The goal is to reconnect communities and improve public health by turning unused spaces into modern parks and trails. The area is about 41 acres owned by CSX Transportation, with whom the Trust for Public Land is working on an acquisition agreement. Once the agreement is signed, a feasibility study can begin. The total cost of the project hasn't yet been determined. Well, that sounds very interesting and actually a good use for the railroad lines, which are no longer being used. And of course, most of the ties and rails have been taken out. So what a good idea. Okay, next we have the largest of the articles here on the business of entertainment, Lewiston. This business thrives on Niagara's wildest waters. Okay, and there's a picture of a number of people sitting in the Whirlpool jet boat. And there's a person at the, literally before the, on the dashboard, so to speak, of the boat, where, in fact, where the windshields are, and it says, "People get ready to take on the rapids with Whirlpool jet boat tours on the Niagara River in Lewiston." And there's a tour guide taking questions from the, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's about 16 passengers. So it says, and again, this is Katie Anderson, "Whirlpool jet boat tours has taken 2.5 million riders through the rapids." Wow. When John Kinney first suggested launching a business that would take passengers through the Niagara Gorge's Class 5 Rapids in 1992, it didn't go over well. Public officials essentially told him, "Take your idea to Canada." More than 30 years later, he operates Whirlpool jet boat tours from waterfront property he owns in Lewiston and in Queensland, Ontario. The company has 130 employees and has taken more than 2.5 million people on tours in the Devil's Hole Rapids. Kinney said it's easy for area residents to forget the Niagara River's uniqueness. And he says, "You know, people are notorious for not doing things in their own backyard," close quote. Kinney grew up near Pittsburgh, kayaking with buddies on the Youghiogheny River. He later went into business with his two friends, brothers Joe and Jack Kowalski. Together, they own three boat tour operations. Jack runs a jet boat tour operation in Montreal. Joe runs a whitewater rafting operation in Northern Ontario. And Kinney runs the Niagara jet boat operation. John Kinney has kayaked all 275 miles of the Grand Canyon and the Niagara Gorge's rapids, the latter of which, he said, don't compare to anything else. He launched the Canadian Whirlpool jet boat tour business in 92 and the Lewiston operation in 95. And since then, he went from tenant to property owner and expanded to 10 boats. In 2002, he bought the property at 115 South Water Street and became the landlord for the Griffin Brewery and Gastro Pub there. He also has offices above and a Whirlpool gift shop next door. About 50 of the 130 employees are stateside and the rest are in Canada, where the company's administrative offices and maintenance operations are located. Looking toward the future, Kinney said he's building up Whirlpool's management team from within, cementing a succession plan, and ensuring that the tours continue for years. And here's a final quote from Mr. Kinney. What we've been able to do here is we figured out a way to exceed our guests' expectation. If the Maid of the Mist has been there for 150 years and we've been here for 35, I think we have at least another 115 left in us. Okay, well, there's confidence for you. Okay, so now that was the second of three articles on this page, Katie Anderson's writing concerning the business of entertainment. And the last one is Tonawanda. Screening Room finds its post Boulevard Mall home. The Screening Room is getting a new space on Elmwood Avenue in Tonawanda. The small boutique theater and arts cafe business has been in the Boulevard Mall for 10 years before abruptly being forced out. It's moving into the Kenton Elmwood Commons, the former Philip Sheridan School, which has been renovated by developer John Doerr into a community hub for a variety of businesses. The Screening Room suite in the building is being renovated, but will open with week-long programming at Halloween, with a grand opening scheduled December 1st. Owner Bob Glibersich said he signed a three-year lease for the building with extensions built in because he plans to be there for a long time. He had heard about Elmwood Commons and visited the space as a potential temporary setup, but said it could work for a permanent location. It will have a boutique cinema with a variety of seating options. Couches up front, table areas, bar stool and theater seats in the back, with capacity of around 75 people. There will also be a larger auditorium with seating for about 250 for larger events. Okay, so that's the business of entertainment. Katie Anderson provided us with all three of those. And now we go to the business of sports, which is a hot item in Western New York. So we go to page 5. And these are being brought to us by Leon Bunny. Okay, the first article is Cosmic Sports. And this has a really interesting headline. And I'm a headline fanatic. I really enjoy witty ones and ones that make you think. And of course, they're supposed to lead you and drag you into the article. Okay. Serial founder branches into hockey. A unique word to use there, serial founder, but we'll find out it's probably not that. I'm actually a serial breather. Okay. What to a local music festival, a brewing company, and a marketing agency have in common? To serial entrepreneur John Chimperman, the answer goes beyond the involvement in all three as a co-founder of the Borderland Music and Arts Festival, founder of 42 North Brewing Company, and creator of his own marketing company. And here's what he says. I'm just a fan of the community business. It was always about, you know, if someone else isn't going to fill this hole, let me go do it. Close quote. Next up, he's become chief marketing officer and vice president of hockey for Cosmic Sports in March. Cosmic Baseball, a glow-in-the-dark variation of baseball played under UV lights, started a few years ago. Cosmic Hockey will begin its inaugural 2027-28 season with venues with capacity of around 10,000. Buffalo doesn't fit that bill, but Simperman said he hopes to expand to National Hockey League facilities by the 2027-28 tour. The organization has already received over 100 applicants for tryouts and has gotten Maury Gare, ex-Sabre Danny Gare's brother, to help recruit players. This is really fun for me because I'm leveraging so much of what I've done in the past with starting and building brands. And of course, this is John Simperman speaking. That's what we're doing right now for Cosmic Hockey. Okay. So thank you, Leon Bunny. Now we go to the largest of the three articles on the page. And boy, there's a familiar sight, especially this past summer.
the new Highmark Stadium. And it says, excuse me, headline, Legends Talks Staffing Stadium Strategy. Company will employ 600 locally in hospitality, tours, and merchandise. And there's a picture of the main entrance to the stadium. And it says, Legends Global began work on the new Highmark Stadium in Orchard Park in 2020. Imagine that, and now it's come to fruition. Okay, let's get to the article. Legends Global was involved with the new Highmark Stadium long before the first shovel went into the ground. And the New York-based company will be involved with the facility and the Buffalo Bills for years to come. Legends delivers fully integrated services to partners, including venues, live events, and brands. Work for Highmark included a feasibility analyst, facility development and project management, premium sales and partnerships, including naming rights and founding partners. Legends Global has 50-plus full-time employees in Buffalo before the stadium opens. Now the firm is involved through stadium tours, merchandise, and hospitality, and will employ around 600 full and part-time employees in Buffalo. Legends Global's first step was feasibility work, which included how the stadium would operate financially, how much premium inventory should be in the building, and how many seats it should have. That led to seating capacity of 60,108, including 1,755 suite loge seats and 4,500 club seats. Chad Estes, Legends Global Executive Vice President and Chief Revenue Officer, said while there might have been some sticker shock on pricing, the plan worked, as inventory sold out sooner than predicted and revenue exceeded projections. For other projects Legends has worked on, the firm has sold season's tickets, private seat licenses, or suites into a facility's first year. The Bills announced December 26, 2025, that PSL inventory had officially sold out. The organization netted $259.06 million in PSL revenue, according to a report filed with the state. And that's about $34 million more than the originally projected $225 million. What stuck out the most to Estes throughout the stadium project compared to others the firm has worked on is the level of pride locals have in their team. Legends typically sets up preview centers for people to be introduced to the new stadium and scope out their seating options. In Buffalo, the majority of fans showed up to scope their stadium seating options, wearing jerseys. And he says, it speaks to their pride. They viewed coming to take a look at what the new stadium had to offer as a team event. We don't see that everywhere. Well, I'm sure he'll continue to find Western New York as a unique place for sport. Okay. My gosh, it's come that time again to... I'm sorry, but again, hey! You're listening to a reading of articles and features from Buffalo Business First, right here on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And more on our website in a minute. Well, not a minute, at the end of my broadcast. Okay, then the third article by Lee and Bunny on this page is Stadium Concessions. Executive chef puts focus on quality. Okay, and there's Nicholas Caroli, executive chef for Legends Global at the new stadium. So let's see what Nicholas, has to say. Every sports venue has nachos. That's why chef Nicholas Caroli and his team went through quite a few brisket variations before determining the nachos at the new Highmark Stadium. And the winner was BBQ Burnt Ends. As executive chef for Legends Global at the Buffalo Bills' new facility, he wanted to focus on quality.
He also teamed up with some local players to round out food and beverage offerings. Local offerings at the stadium include Chevetta's Catering and Chicken Barbecue and Southern Junction, found around the perimeter. Within the concourse are Half Luna Empanadas, Bapchia's Pierogies, and Fam's Kitchen. Caroli's experience is rooted in butchery, with experience in New York City's restaurant and steakhouse scene. He was also executive sous chef at Yankee Stadium for 5 years. Well, good luck to him, and sounds like there may be some good eating at the stadium. So that's it for page 5, all articles written by Lee and Bunny. That was the business of sports, and oh, I got to tell you right now, be still my heart. And if you've listened to me any number of times reading Buffalo Business First, you know what sets me aflutter. Oh my. That's right, I can hear it in thousands of homes across Western New York. You're all yelling, the list. That's right, advertising agencies is the topic this week. And they're ranked by their gross advertising income for 2025. Now, this list was, as they usually are, compiled by Hassan Green. But again, I wanted to read you that he has a very important caveat at the bottom. About the list, information on the list was obtained through Buffalo Business First Research or supplied by individual firms through questionnaires which BBF, Buffalo Business First, could not independently verify. Okay. Let's see. I'm sorry to be yawning here. Okay. It's not the content and it's not the reader. Okay. Advertising agencies ranked by their 2025 gross advertising income. And in number one of nine, is Crowley Webb on Main in the City. Gross advertising income was $15.2 million. Employees in advertising and marketing, 101. Local clients include M&T Bank, ESAB, American Automobile Association. And their top local executive is Tricia Barrett. Next in second place, we have the Martin Group. And they're also from Main Street in Buffalo. $14.46 million in advertising income, 2025. They have 56 employees in advertising and marketing. And their more notable clients are Wegmans, New Era Cap, and Rich Products. And they have three top local executives, Todd Martin, Lisa Belachico, and Matt Davison. In third place, we have Gelia, G-E-L-I-A, on Youngs Road in Williamsville at $8.77 million. They have 61 employees in advertising or marketing. And their top clients include Independent Health, Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. James Phipps is their top local executive. In fourth place, 360. Now that's not, it's not in numbers. They write out the numbers. Okay, so it's T-H-R-E-E-S-I-X-T-Y, 360. Sheridan Drive in Tonawanda, $5.54 million in 2025. They have 27 local employees in advertising or marketing. NSPB, Art Park, Taste of Buffalo are some of their biggest clients. And Joel Colombo is their top local executive. In fifth place, 19 Ideas. Wow. That's an interesting name. And they're on Essex Street in the city of Buffalo. $1.97 million in gross advertising income last year. They have 10 local employees. And their top, clients include Niagara University, Hunt Real Estate, OWM Integrative Wellness. And Katie Krawczyk and Dan Giganti are their top local executives. Okay, we're already at number six. Tipping Point Communications on Ellicott Street in Buffalo. 1.85 million in income last year, 14 local employees that are in advertising and marketing, and their clients include Northwind Services, Connors and Ferris, Abold Co., New York Smart One, and I Corridor. Okay, I'm sorry, that's New York Smart I Corridor. Michelle Ashby and Laura Sigarowitz are their top executives. Okay, seventh place is Luminous, L-U-M-I-N-U-S. They're at Lafayette Square in downtown Buffalo. Their income for 2025, $734,721. They have six local employees. Their clients include Doodlebugs, Catholic Health, Excelsior Orthopedics, and Tim Bouchard is their top local executive. In eighth place, we have Quinlan, Q-U-I-N-L-A-N, on Exchange Street in Buffalo. They had income of $687,837, four local employees. Their clients include Apple Rubber Products, Arby's, and Mocan. And Gary Miller is their top local executive. And finally, we're ending the list at nine. The ninth advertising agency is Western New York Media House LLC, and they're located on Ellicott Street in the city. $378,386 for their income in 2025. They have one employee, and some of their clients include local state agencies, Willie Hutch Jones Educational and Sports Program, local nonprofit agencies, and the top local executive of this is Lisa Napier or Napier. So there you have it, folks. Hassan Green delivered it. Well, let's say he wrote it, but we delivered it to you. Okay, so literally that's the end. That was page six. Page seven is a full page ad. So now we're down to page eight. And page eight is the business of food and drink. And there's one of the mystery items here. Okay, the business of food and drink. Tracy Drury is giving us two full articles and also one of my favorites. And I'm going to tell you why I call them mystery items. Because it's either a quote or a number, and it's of import to the end that we are supposed to, in a sense, be lured in and hooked even before we know who said it or what the number refers to. Hey, I'm in seventh heaven. I know, little things amuse little minds, but here's the quote. I'm going to start with this one. We want to keep growing, and we were looking for a location in either the North Towns or the South Towns. An alien invasion, that would be my guess. No, okay. We want to keep growing, and we were looking for a location in either the North Towns or South Towns. Okay, well, it's Anthony Lukasch, L-U-K-S-C-H, who's the co-owner of Joey's Pizza, after Joey's took over the lease at 712 Maples Road in Amherst. And what did he say again when they took over that pizza spot? We want to keep growing, and we were looking for a location in either the North Towns or the South Towns. So now they're going to be moving to Maple Road in Amherst. Okay. Next, we have Elmwood Village, and Tracy Drury writes, snack-based businesses unite under a new brand. Okay. Two snack-based businesses are joining forces. The Cereal Spot is opening at 1124 Elmwood Avenue with Popularity Soda Popcorn Culture, which got its start at that site in mid-2025. The site will be rebranded as the Snack Lab, powered by the Cereal Spot and Popularity. The new deal will see Cereal Spot's Kayla Credicott and her wife Ashley partner with Popularity's Dave Gardingham and his husband Mike as a dual-brand snack bar concept that carries products from both businesses. That includes Popularity's custom-made popcorn, customized dirty soda pop, and baked goods alongside Cereal Spot's shakes, cereal-infused ice cream, and cupcakes, and of course, dozens of flavors of cereal and milk. And finally, to end this article, Tracy writes, the shop will be open as a late-night cafe Thursday through Saturday. The team is finalizing a new lease with Sinatra & Company. They hope to hire between 5 to 10 employees, and that will be located at 1124 Elmwood Avenue. Okay, we have one more article on this page, page 8, and it concerns Grand Island. And there's a picture here of Richard and Jenny Benz, owners of Dick and Jenny's restaurant on Grand Island. Okay. We made it through Katrina and COVID. Disaster management is my skill set at this point, but running a restaurant is that way. It's always fraught with challenges. So says the smiling Jenny. She and her husband are seated at a long bar, of course, facing the camera. And it's a very well-lit, very, very nice-looking restaurant. There's paneling on the back wall to match the bar. And, of course, there's a bar behind the actual bar you sit at. And it looks like, from a distance, it's well-stocked. And I'm quoting Bette Midler on that one, from a distance. And, of course, they're all smiles, too, because they're happy to be right here now on Grand Island. And it says, 2 decades later, New Orleans-style eatery is still going strong. The dozens of hand-painted plates behind the bar and on the upper walls at Dick and Jenny's restaurant are much more than a quirky decor choice. The 18-year-old New Orleans-style restaurant at 1270 Baseline Road on Grand Island was built on those plates, which owner Richard and Jenny Ben said to patrons and investors to help fund a bar experience. I'm sorry, they were sold. So I'm going to read that again to give them justice. Okay. The 18-year-old New Orleans-style restaurant at 1270 Baseline Road in Grand Island was built on those plates, which owners Richard and Jenny Benz sold to patrons and investors to help fund a bar expansion, renovations, and to keep paving the parking lot at the 1800s-era building. They used the same tactic for major plumbing repairs at their original restaurant in New Orleans in 1999, a site they sold it to employees after Hurricane Katrina when they moved back to Jenny's hometown. Both restaurants built their reputations on the strength of Richard's cooking. Had it not been for those thrift store plates painted by Richard, however, Dick and Jenny's might never have opened. Jenny remembers discovering major plumbing issues that led to unexpected expenses just weeks before they planned to open in New Orleans. There was enough hype about the venture that they raised $10,000 by selling plates for $100 apiece, giving buyers 5 $50 gift certificates. It was back to square one when they moved to Grand Island in 2005, living with her uncle for about a year. The couple still had a mortgage payment at their destroyed home in New Orleans, but after the insurance settlement came through in 2006, they sold the original restaurant to employees and bought the Baseline Road building. The location's history dates back to the 1890s, when a building on this site once served as a stagecoach shop. It had been empty for several years with a flooded basement and mold that required a year-long overhaul. Oh, my. Jenny remembered how vibrant the place was as Dell and Herb's and Herb's and Brennan's growing up. And she said, I had come here all my life. It was fun. It was a rocking place. It had been a Grand Island landmark. So they reopened Dick and Jenny's in 2008 as a coffee house, even added lunch, and later brought back the bar. They found a vintage 1850s wooden bar from the former Lakeview Smorgasbord on Route 5. Oh boy, many a guilty moment there I spent. Okay. The restaurant seats about 65 at 18 tables and has a staff of 25. Their goal is to deliver creative options that their guests wouldn't make at home. Over the years, they've adjusted. That included adding dinner service in 2009. They kept breakfast, lunch, and dinner service through the pandemic, but by 2021, they were ready to cut back. Saturday breakfast is returning this month, with the diner shift operating Tuesdays through Saturday. Adding a breakfast shift gives staff more hours while generating more revenue. Now, Jenny's also adjusted the menu to help manage food costs that are rising. That includes taking scallops off the menu in February for the first time after prices rose to $48 per pound. Youch. They've also expanded with in-person events, including a Harvest Winemakers dinner in September, wine and food travel events that have included international trips. And Jenny has the last word here, and she's smiling. I can see her in the picture smiling. Again, Jenny and Richard have a very contented look on their face, and she says, it's continual work to stay at the front of people's brains somehow, and it gets more challenging as you get older in the business because there's always a new restaurant out there. And how right she is. So that's the end of the page on, we all know it's on the business of food and drink, and very, very interesting, the locales. Elmwood Village for the one, Grand Island, of course, for the larger of them all, and then the big quote where they landed in 712 Maple Road in Amherst, Joey's Pizza. Okay, well, that's it for page 8. Page 9 is a full-page ad, which I'm not going to read. So, folks, oh, but first I have to read this to you. I'm not sorry. We need to plug ourselves. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from Buffalo Business First on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Okay, now, I have to budget here. I'm already at my 48th minute, and I only have about 10 minutes left with you. So I'm not going to read everything word for word. So I'm going to read some of the graphs for you rather than reading some of the text. Okay, so let me get the screen up here. Okay, I'll just read the intro, though. Here's where Western New York's pockets of wealth lie. A surprising zip code rose to the top of the Business Journal's latest analyst analysis to find clusters of wealth in the region. Sarah Paulson Meehan wrote this, and she says, a surprising zip code rose to the top, and this zip code, oh my gosh, is 14223, which includes parts of Tonawanda and Kenmore. Okay, you're listening to a former postal employee. I know my zip codes, and that's an interesting place for pockets of wealth. Okay. Our ranking analyzes several merits, including median income, home values, and owner-occupied housing, among others. It also factors in population density, allowing us to showcase the zip codes where the most wealth is concentrated. not just where the absolute richest live. Demographic data comes from the U.S. Bureau of Census, the American Community Survey. And here's what the data showed about 14223. And again, that includes Tonawanda and Kenmore. The per capita income was $47,000. Median household income, $84,000. Median home value, $216,000. Population per square mile, $6,500. Poverty rate was at 9.5. Median age is 42.2. And the home ownership rate was 77%. They didn't have, in 14223, the highest per capita income on the local list, and the lowest rate, or the highest home ownership rate. What it does have is enough wealth, widespread enough, and a population big enough to compensate for its higher than average poverty rate. Okay, so I'm just going to read them to you again. I'm really pressed for time here. So Western New York's wealthiest zip codes. Okay, we're hopping to it here, folks. 14223, which is Tonawanda Kenmore, population 22,611. Median household is 84,000. Second place is Amherst Williamsville, 14221. Population 55,255. And their median household income is 101,000. Third place goes to Depew, Cheektowaga, and Lancaster. That's 14043. Population of 25,000. The median household income is 74,000. Fourth place is Cheektowaga. The zip, 14227. Actually, that's by the Postal Service considered South Cheektowaga. 14227. Population is 20,000. The median household income is 68,000. Fifth place is East Amherst, 14051. Population 19,000. Median income is 135,000. Sixth place is West Seneca, 14224. Population of 41,000. Median household income is 80,000. Seventh place is Lakeview, 14085. Population of 8,500. The median household income is 129,000. Eighth place is Lancaster itself. That's not the Depew Cheektowaga Lancaster combo. This is 14086, including the village. Population of 35,635. The median household income is $99,000. Ninth place is Hamburg, 14075. Population 44,000. Median household image is 83,000. And last but certainly not least, in 10th place is Orchard Park, 14127. Population 31,000. And the median household income is 109,000. Okay, my gosh. Okay. I have a little time I could. Okay. Western New York's top zip codes for income per capita. We go with 14126 in Alcott, 14032 Clarence Center in East Amherst, 14051 East Amherst, 14135 in Sheridan, and 14031 in Clarence. And Western New York top zip codes for home value. Okay. So I'm going to read these, and some of them are actually tied. Okay. In first place, we have, oh boy. Okay, is 14032. Now these are home values over 502,000. Next is 14126, 430,000. 14051, 421,000. 14127, 364,000. 14059 is 346,000. Next is 14031 at 343,000. Also at 343,000 is 14052. 14033 at 338,000. 14170 at 337,000. And 334,000 is 14082. And the Western New York top zip codes for median household income. Okay. First place is Clarence Center in East Amherst, 14032, and they're at 168,000 median annual income. Next is Olcott in Niagara County, 167,000. East Amherst is in third with 135,000. Lakeview is in fourth, 14085, with 129,000. And finally, Marilla, 14102, Marilla in Erie County, at 119,000 median income household income, excuse me. So there you have it. I'm sorry, I can't get to any more today. And that's unfortunate, but there is something you can do. You can actually call into us and ask somebody to complete reading the cover story for Buffalo Business First. Okay, so just before I sign off, I would like to mention that I've used this phrase before. You will find a plethora of things, a cornucopia of value, when you go to our website. And all you do is go into your browser and put these letters in. NFRRS, Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Put those letters in, click it, and before your very eyes, within very few seconds, you're going to see the website for Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And believe me, books, magazines, theater, fiction, nonfiction, newspapers, periodicals, ladies and gentlemen, please. As they used to say in radio back in the 1950s, do yourself a favor. Please, go to our website and find out what you can get to there and get a good grasp on what we offer. This wonderful nonprofit called Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. So I'm going to bid you a fondue. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the current issue of Buffalo Business First, August 21st through 27th, 2026. We read from Buffalo Business First every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Your reader, and I'm very happy and thankful to you for listening, your reader has been Fran McNamara. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service is Time Magazine. At 8 o'clock is the New York Times. And at 9 o'clock with our friends at Comic Story, and we have some comic books for you. These include Ultimate Spider-Man, Absolute Superman, Nightwing, and Green Lantern. Stay with us. Thank you. following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability.